Storylines Midwest is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities and Barnes & Noble Booksellers.
Every Friday afternoon, summer, winter, spring, and fall, the highways of the Midwest are clogged with cars headed to the lakes, the rivers, and the forests of our North Woods.
Even Ernest Hemingway went to northern Michigan to learn how to hunt, how to fish, how to live without suburban comforts.
From Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Storylines Midwest. I'm Charity Nebbe.
And I'm Keith Taylor. Today, the northern forests of the Midwest and the wild world of Ernest Hemingway's Nick Adams stories.
And we'd like to hear from you with your stories, your questions, and what you think we're looking for when we go up north. 866-255-2762. 866-255-2762. It's Storylines Midwest. In the early part of the 20th century, the railway companies tried to lure big city vacationers to northern Michigan. A doctor from Chicago was one of the people who purchased land and built a summer cottage near Petoskey, Michigan. Each summer, he brought his family and his young son, Ernest Hemingway, to Windermere, the family's cottage on Walloon Lake. James Sanford is one of Ernest Hemingway's nephews. He has a family photo album that shows how the family spent the summers here.
There are a number of them with Ernest and his fishing prowess, showing the fish that he had gotten out of Walloon Lake and had gotten over at Horton Bay at Schwartz Creek, and some of the birds that he had shot and some of the animals that he had shot.
Hemingway spent his summers roaming the woods here, paddling the lakes, and collecting the experiences that would later become the adventures of his character, Nick Adams. Nick Adams was Hemingway's alter ego, and many of the short stories about Nick are set in the area around Petoskey.
I guess you could say that of those stories, you can see through some of the obvious to us changes that were put in, but you can see a lot of the reality. A lot of the reality is there because he wrote about realism. He changed names. He changed places of where something was written about. But the actual happenings are still very much there. And you get a much greater feeling about those stories if you do come to the area and read them over again.
Even at the time Hemingway wrote about northern Michigan, much of the wild forest had already been logged to build Midwestern cities. Much of what was left has been lost to urban sprawl and housing developments. But you can still find the sites Hemingway writes about and the streams like Horton Creek where Nick Adams would fish.
Something's swimming at us. Look, look, look. The beaver. He doesn't know we're here yet. What? He's going to go nuts. Oh, no, that's a salmon.
James McCullough is an English professor at North Central Michigan College and a lifelong resident of Petoskey.
I'm imagining that bay where the stream lets out is where many of those Nick Adams stories took place, where young people are swimming together, and where he's... Oh, there's a kingfisher, a belted kingfisher, where he's, for example, in the end of something, fishing and trolling around, paddling in the bay. And, ooh, there goes a heron. There's another heron.
McCullough says Hemingway's Nick Adams stories really capture what it's like growing up in northern Michigan, fishing, thinking, and spending time in the woods. In The Last Good Country, a story that comes straight from Hemingway's life, Nick and his sister escape to the woods after Nick hunts out of season.
It was a lovely morning now. The sky was high and clear and blue, and no clouds had come yet. Nick was happy with his sister, and he thought, no matter how this thing comes out, we might as well have a good, happy time. He had already learned that there was only one day at a time, and that it was always the day you were in. It would be today until it was tonight, and tomorrow it would be today again. This is the main thing he'd learned so far.
Hemingway's life eventually took him far from northern Michigan, but his love of fishing and adventure stayed with him. He returned to northern Michigan after World War I to recover from the war, fish, and hang out at the local dives. He was living in a boarding house on State Street in Petoskey when he decided to get serious about his writing.
A good day was a three-pencil day.
Candace Eaton is the director of Petoskey's Little Traverse History Museum.
He would start with a legal pad, and he'd start with three sharp pencils, and he would wear out the lead in each pencil, and if he could write to finish three pencils so that they would have to be sharpened again, that was a good day for writing.
Candace Eaton says most people don't associate Hemingway with Michigan like they do with Key West or Paris.
The average tourist has no idea that there's a Hemingway, Michigan-Hemingway connection. I think out of respect to the family, we've always tried to keep it very quiet. You know, we're not out having little Ernest Hemingway look-alike contests.
Still, a small group of tourists and Hemingway fans come to Petoskey seeking traces of the man and the real-life places found in the pages of the Nick Adams stories.
It's Storylines Midwest. I'm Keith Taylor.
And I'm Charity Nebbe. Now, the collection of stories we're talking about today, the Nick Adams stories, that's not a collection that Hemingway himself put together.
No, you're right. You're right, Charity. This is a collection that was put together 10 years after he died. It puts all the Nick Adams stories in chronological order from his boyhood through the end of World War I and even beyond, but certainly that point when he returns to northern Michigan to heal his wounds, both the physical and psychological wounds. It includes several stories or fragments of stories that had never been published before, including a wonderful The Last Good Country, 60 pages of an unfinished novel.
Which is actually my favorite story in the whole collection.
That's gorgeous, yeah.
And with us today, out of the canoe and into the studio to talk about Ernest Hemingway and the Nick Adams stories, is James McCullough. He teaches English at North Central Michigan College and is the director of the Bear River Writers Conference. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call. 866-255-2762 is the number. That's 866-255-2762. Now, James, you are from Petoskey. Do people still tell stories about Ernest Hemingway and his family there?
Oh, they do, and I think increasingly so. I think the interest in him, I mean, even this show is evidence of it. In the past, I think 5 years, there's been an increasing interest in the history in our area. The Hemingway Conference has been held at the Perry Hotel there for a number of years, and so yes, I think so.
So you think Petoskey's going to get in on the Hemingway boon like Key West or even Havana?
Well, I hope not like that. You know, I hope not like that. I think Candace Eaton referred to the kind of respect that I think we do want to show the family. Sonny Miller Hemingway, who was the younger sister in the short story that you just referred to, Last of the Good Country, lived in Windermere until she passed away, and her son is a friend of our family as well. They want their privacy, and I think that there are ways to show respect and to appreciate the history, the literary history and stories around Hemingway's upbringing without imposing on the family's need for privacy.
Are we, you know, when in the beginning of the show there, I was talking about Hemingway, Nick Adams being Hemingway's alter ego. Is that right? I mean, is it right to see Nick Adams as Hemingway?
Well, I think you can't, I personally can't escape the, and I think Jerry will agree with me, Jerry Dennis, when he speaks later, that you can't escape the absolute realism of the descriptions of landscape, and you can't escape some of the biographical realities that in some of the stories he is with, Nick Adams is with his doctor father, and Hemingway's father was a doctor at Indian camps, and there were Indian camps on Wallen Lake, and you can't escape some of the clearly biographical references in many of the stories, and so where it becomes fiction. Where he makes it up is really where the stories are most wonderful, I think. But all of those stories tend to be based in a landscape that's extremely accurate and that makes them appeal to me personally in a very powerful way, because I grew up in that area and I recognize almost every place that he describes.
Now, do we know when in his career all these Nick Adams stories were written?
Most of them were written, in, as far as I know, when he was in Paris, actually. My understanding is that he took with him a map of Michigan and wrote them from memory. And so he wasn't actually in Michigan when he was writing them. Big Two-Hearted River is one of the most famous, and that I know was written when he was in Paris.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, his first book was called In Our Time, and it had
In
most
Our
of
Time.
Those
mm-hmm.
Nick Adams stories. Yeah, mm-hmm. although not, mm-hmm. it's only half the size of the Nick Adams stories collection that we have now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
James, what could you do a quick description of some of that landscape, some of those rivers and things?
Oh, sure. Wallen Lake is certainly at the time that Windermere was being built at the turn of the century, was becoming a resort. Lake, it's absolutely, it must have been pristine at that time. Blue water, blue and blue-green water, sandy beaches on the arm where they are. It's a substantially large lake with a north arm and a west arm. They were on the west arm. And that particular part of the lake is stunningly beautiful. Now it's, of course, lined with multi-million dollar homes, and much of the sense of wilderness has lost there. But you can tell, looking at that lake, where the more historic homes are. They're set back a little bit more. There are trees between the cottages and the lake. And there is a flowing from Wallen Lake, the Bear River, winds through Charlevoix and Emmett counties and ends up in Petoskey. It's fed by a number of tributaries, Springbrook, which he refers to, and not far from those rivers are rivers like the Black, which Hemingway refers to quite frequently, both in the in the Nick Adams stories. He and his friends would fish those rivers frequently. And Horton Creek is just a hop, kind of a hop and a skip across the lake and over a little knoll of land toward Lake Charlevoix. And he would paddle across Wallen Lake, take a little trip down a dusty road, and be in Horton Bay, where another stream, as I said, Horton Creek, would flow into Lake Charlevoix. And that's the setting for a number of those stories as well.
Well, I know you can't speak for everybody in Petoskey, but how generally are these stories viewed in Petoskey?
Well, it's interesting. Petoskey has changed so dramatically in my young life. I'm 40. And from the time I was a boy until now, the changes are extremely dramatic. And I would say that the majority of the population in Petoskey now are people who have moved there in the last 10 to 15 years. So I don't know that the majority of the people know much about the history. I think the interest is increasing because people who like me, who have grown up in the region, are pushing for people to recognize those bits of our literary history that define us as a region, and certainly Hemingway figures in there largely. Candace Eaton, whose voice you heard earlier, has been working all of her life with the Historical Society to bring an awareness across the country of the significance of our region in terms of Hemingway's life. And so I think those who grew up with a memory of the people who were either immediately affected by Hemingway's presence there or whose families are associated with the Hemingway family are willing and able to talk to that history and wanting to talk about it. But I don't know that there's a real broad-based consciousness of the significance of these stories to the region.
You're listening hopefully, to... Oh, sorry.
Hopefully, a show like this can help raise that awareness and stimulate more interest in reading these stories because they're wonderful, wonderful stories.
And you are listening to Storylines Midwest. We're talking today with James McCullough. You can join our conversation by giving us a call at 866-255-2762. That's 866-255-2762. I'm Charity Nebbe.
And I'm Keith Taylor. Joining us now is another person from Northern Michigan, Jerry Dennis. Jerry is a writer. He's a native of Northern Michigan, just a little bit down the Lake Michigan coast from James, close to Traverse City. He, too, grew up hunting and fishing, but he makes his living as a writer. He writes about nature and outdoors for the New York Times, National Geographic Traveler, Audubon, and other publications. He's the author of A Place on the Water and several other collections of essays about the Northern Midwest. Welcome, Jerry. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, Keith. Hi. Hi, Charity.
Hi there.
Jerry, I want to know when you first remember reading these Hemingway stories.
Oh, I remember very clearly. I was in high school, and I think it was probably the year that the Nick Adams stories was published as a separate collection. And I read it for class, and I was bowled over. I of course, had heard of Hemingway, and like so many people, I thought of him as the writer in Paris and Key West and Sun Valley. And I knew there was some kind of Michigan connection, but I'd never investigated it. And to be reading these amazing stories, first of all, that you know, were about things that I loved, was one thrill. But then to be recognizing the places, I think it actually was the point at which I decided that I wanted to be a writer, because it gave me validation. It said it's okay to write about this humble Northwoods place, and okay to write about the things that I loved.
James, how about you? Do you remember the first time you read a Nick Adams story?
I do, and I think my memories even precede reading, because there's some tremendous parallels between my life and Hemingway's, in that I'm the son of a doctor who moved from Illinois up to Petoskey. My mother is from Oak Park, where the Hemingways were. My grandmother remembers Grandpa Hemingway, and when my parents moved up in the early 60s, they became friends with Sonny Miller Hemingway, so I remember being at Windermere as a boy, and I knew of his presence. You know, his presence was there long before I read the stories, and then I read the stories when I was in middle school, and that was about the time that my father started taking me on fly fishing trips, and we took one pilgrimage across the UP to the Fox River. Maybe we'll talk about that later. Jerry wrote a wonderful essay that's quite similar to my experience when on the Fox River, where we were nearly devoured by insects and caught almost no fish. But yeah, like Jerry, very young, became aware of these stories, and they've never left me.
So Jerry, you had fished those rivers. You knew those lakes and things that you mentioned in the stories.
Yes, some of them. Most of my fishing was a little south of Petoskey, so I had never been on Walloon Lake, but I had been on the Fox River, and I had been on, started learning more about Hemingway's travels in northern Michigan, I discovered that he had fished the rivers that I knew the most personally, like the Boardman River and the Rapid River. And although he didn't write his story specifically about those waters, I read his published letters, the Carlos Baker collection, and it was full of these places that I knew so well.
Jerry, you know, you're talking about how there were parallels in your childhood and Hemingway's childhood about the places that you were, and that touched you. But what was it about these stories, other than the fact that they were about places you were familiar with, that you think really touched you at that point?
Well, I think one of the reasons Hemingway is so appealing to young readers is that he's so accessible. Of course, he can be read on a lot of different levels, but his short declarative sentences were just the thing for a short attention span high school student. And, you know, of course, the subject made it more appealing, but they drew you in a little bit more, and then the other stories grabbed me as well. But I'm sure it was the apparent ease with which he wrote them that made it seem easy to be a writer, and it made it definitely easy to be a reader. They're so visual. You can't read any of Hemingway's early stories, especially without seeing what he wanted you to see. And that was a new experience for me. Much of the fiction I was reading was dense convoluted sentences that wasn't nearly as visual or as accessible.
Now, you have young sons now, Jerry. What, one's in high school and one's just done with college?
That's right.
Did they discover Hemingway the same way, or was he ignored in their classes?
Well, I pushed him on them earlier and maybe scared him off a little bit. My oldest son is a fan, and my youngest, who's 15, is a little more lukewarm about it for now, but maybe he'll come to it later.
How about you, James? How about your students up in Petoskey? Do they read Hemingway?
Yeah, in my creative writing class, I used not one of the Nick Adams stories, but I used Hills Like White Elephants, and so I used passages from Dr. Constance Kappel's book, where she has a chapter that makes a parallel between Hemingway's journalistic writing about a trip to Sini, to the Fox River, and compares that to his more mature fictional writing, in which he's really writing about the same kinds of scenes, and the evolution of his writing is dramatic in those comparisons, and so I like to use him in that way.
You're listening.
I like to use those passages. You're
listening to Storylines Midwest. And if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call. 866-255-2762 is the number to call. And I'll stop interrupting James and and start talking to you. 866-255-2762. And Jason is on the line in Jackson, Michigan. Hello, Jason.
Yes.
How are you this evening?
I'm doing very good.
Hi, Jason.
Hello. I grew up in the area. I grew up on Walloon Lake. And before we lived on Walloon Lake, we used to had a little cottage, which was an old yellow schoolhouse on Resort Pike Road, and it was next to...
Oh, my gosh. You lived in that?
Yes, I lived in that.
In the valley by school?
Yeah, it burned down.
My father farmed that. My father's a doctor. He took care of the Hibbler family that lives right next to there.
I used to talk to the old man. It was one,
yes.
The schoolhouse burnt down, but I still have the bell, and that's the only thing that's left over from it. It says 1776 on it, and an old iron bell, and every once in a while I get it out and ring it and think about Hemingway. Now, I could take you to any one of these little places that he talks about, the exact square foot, and I've been there before. And
right.
I remember reading my very first Nick Adams story, and I had no idea, and I read it, and I'm like, oh, my God, that's me. And my father was a dentist, and so I identify a lot. But really, it's the landscape, and he's exactly right. It's exactly the way that he describes it, and boy, I feel so close to it. And talking to the farmer that knew Hemingway, it was incredible. And for us living up there on Walloon, he was not such a famous person as much as he was just our neighbor.
Do you ever get back there, Jason?
Yes, I do. Not as much as often. We had to sell the cottage because our parents died. But every summer and every weekend in the winter, my dad took us up there. And, you know, we come hell or high water, we were there. And we got the most out of it.
Jason, how young were you when you first read your first Nick Adams story?
Actually, my first Nick Adams story was in a creative writing class as a freshman in college. And we read it as a exercise, and when I first started reading it, it just blew my mind because I had read other Hemingway before then, but this is the first Nick Adams, and it just spoke to me because it was me.
Great.
Isn't that something? Did you know, Jason, that next to that school, the schoolhouse burned down, right?
Yes, it did.
But there was a church there, too.
Not that I remember,
but there was.
Okay,
and there was, and Hemingway was actually went to one sort of revival session in that church before it was either torn down. It was right next to the schoolhouse that he lived in, and he was in there one time for one evening and was kind of put off by the fundamentalism. And
so that would have been sometime around 1910, James. We're going long ways before Jason and that one.
That's long before you, Jason.
I heard stories that he had gone to some town meetings in the schoolhouse. Now, would that be true, or do you not know about that?
I don't know about that.
Okay.
I know that from my reading anyway, that there was a small church there, and that he went to a revival meeting there and sat in the back with a frown and never returned. But nope. he was there. He was standing on your property, from what I understand.
Wow. Now, one thing I do remember is my father used to take us on snowmobile trips in the woods behind it, and we'd come to this little tributary where it was just a little trickle of a freshwater spring. The only mm-hmm. time ever my father would let us get out, and we would drink. We'd put our mouth down into it, just like the deep, and drink right out of it because it was so clean.
I used to grouse hunt right down there.
Pardon?
I used to grouse hunt down there all the time when I was a kid.
You know exactly. It's like right in the
exactly
little valley.
That's right.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's still there, I'm sure.
Oh, it is.
Jason, thank you so much for your call.
Oh, thank you for having me.
If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call, 866-255-2762. And Ray is on the line in Lansing, Michigan. Hello, Ray.
Hi. Just wanted to make a few comments and a question. My comments would be, I'm a great Hemingway fan, and one of the things that I find most enjoyable about reading Hemingway is it's almost like he's the ultimate tour guide. And he also has great appreciation for food, wine, country, geography, and all those type of things. And when you read him, you really feel like you're a part of the story. But for my question, and I have some ideas, but I'm interested in hearing what your idea is. How come you think Hemingway did not return to Michigan as an older adult?
Well, James, you want to...
Or Jerry, go ahead, Jerry.
And I talked about that. I'm going to let Jerry go there.
Yeah, I think there's some real possibilities. One is that the North Country represented a place that wouldn't change for him. He grew up at a time of tremendous change, of course, and Oak Park was going through big changes while he was a kid. And then World War I, of course, changed everything. And he left some clues to that. He talked about it a few times in letters that Northern Michigan would always be there, that the wilderness wouldn't change, the woods wouldn't change. And of course, he knew better, and I'm sure that he was convinced that he would be disappointed. And he said a few times in his letters, when he tried to go back to other places, that it was a mistake, that you can't go back, that the good places are better off left in your mind the way that you remember them.
I agree with that, by the way, and it also makes it interesting to be for people like Jerry and me to have not left. And to know that really our fate is to stay and to try to preserve and defend what's left. Hemingway had the advantage of being able to just take off from place to place, continually searching new experiences until he ran out of gas and ended it.
Yeah.
Ray, thank you so much for your call. And if you'd like to join our conversation, we're going to take a short break here, but we'll be back in a few minutes. You can give us a call, 866-255-2762. That's 866-255-2762. Today we're talking to James McCullough. He teaches English at North Central Michigan College, and he's also the director of the Bear River Writers Conference, and also Jerry Dennis, who's a Northern Michigan writer. He's published several collections of essays about nature, including A Place on the Water and Angler's Reflections on Home. For more information on Storylines Midwest or the books we're reading, you can visit our website. That's storylines.ala.org, or you can go to your local public library. Participating libraries have copies of the books, program schedules, and our Storylines discussion guides. You're listening to Storylines Midwest.
Storylines Midwest is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities and Barnes & Noble Booksellers.